This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
This is a sign of a bigger change, which is CMS, not only on this administration, but the previous one, has been slowly moving procedures and different diagnoses, different services to other sites of service. This is a sign of CMS beginning to move much quicker to lower sites of service. This is only the beginning.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Trevor Durin, and today we have a topic that's so nice we have to do it twice. CMS recently released proposed payment changes, and they really fall into two big buckets of what's going to be the most impactful. And the first is site of care shifts, and the second is changes to virtual health reimbursement. We broke those topics into separate episodes because there's a lot to cover. So today, our policy experts, Valinda Rutledge, who's a former hospital CEO and a former leader of CMMI, and Ryota Tirado will walk through the changes to site of care regulation. And then Chad Geese, who leads our CV research team, will discuss the differing impacts across service lines. Valinda, please get us started. What do you think about this big announcement from CMS?
Well, those of us that are policy nerds were totally blown away when the OPPS rule came out, the proposed one, and they have something that we were not expecting at all. There's not very often that CMS surprises us, but they definitely did with this one. And they are proposing in this rule that they would eliminate the inpatient-only list by 2024. What this list is of over 1,700 codes of mainly procedures, complex procedures, that can only be done in an inpatient setting. They would, on a yearly basis, take a look at moving them off of the inpatient only into hospital outpatient department or even ASC if they felt that there had been advances in technology that made it safer for Medicare beneficiaries to have that procedure done outside the inpatient only. The other advantage of when they were on the inpatient only list, hospitals then knew that those procedures were exempt by the two midnight rule and that they would not be subject to QIO review. And so that made it a lot easier for them. So what CMS did with this proposed rule, which quite frankly, Trevor, surprised everybody, is they're going to recommend getting rid of the entire rule. And that having whether the procedure is done in inpatient or hospital outpatient department will be totally at the discretion of the physician that decides based upon the patient's condition. This transition to eliminate the inpatient only list will be done over 3 years, so it will be totally done by 2024. To begin, they're going to start in 2021, January 1st, 2021, 266 muscular skeleton codes, which suddenly have that option to be inpatient versus outpatient. That does not mean if this list is eliminated that the procedure can't be done in inpatient basis. It can be done. It's just allowing the physician to have that flexibility to do in a hospital outpatient department. What this is going to do is, one, have some financial impact, and two, compliance. But my colleague, Ryota, has done so much work on it. Ryota, tell us a little bit about what you found out.
This has got a lot of our members worried, especially as I focus in orthopedics and spine as well. And one of the biggest recent changes to the inpatient-only list was joint replacement coming off the inpatient-only list, first in 2018 with a total knee replacement, and then this year in 2020, total hip replacement had come off. And when those procedures came off the inpatient-only list, the financial impact for hospitals have been substantial. First, in 2018, the payment differential between, say, an uncomplicated joint knee replacement in 2018 was 18% lower in a hospital outpatient department payment rate. So immediately, for cases that shifted to outpatient status under the two midnight rule, hospitals saw a big impact. And the more important part about this is it's so variable, not just by market, but by organization. And as Valinda mentioned, especially with the physician comfort level, where we saw really huge shifts. Some organizations reported that the first day that the change in rule came in effect for total knee replacement, 80% of their cases shifted to outpatient status. Other organizations barely shifted. So huge range. Now, the national average was more about 24% or so. So there is a big range. Looking at and considering 266 musculoskeletal procedures coming off, that's a large list. The good news is there's a lot of stuff on there that is not going to realistically move into the outpatient setting, right? So you have amputations on that list that I really can't conceive of an amputation below the hip not being appropriate for an inpatient setting, but it would require potential compliance issues. So where you might previously not have had to document your physician's reasoning for why an amputation would really require an inpatient admission, you potentially need to document that if you expect that stay to be less than 2 midnights. Where we do see potentially the biggest impact, though, is shoulder replacement. Shoulder replacement is one where we've seen robust growth in volumes due to technological advancements and functional outcomes advancements in the last decade. But the length of stay is also really low. The average is around 1.4 days nationally for CMS, really well under that 2 midnight benchmark for 2 midnight rule. So depending on a procedure, the impact could vary quite a bit. CMS is going to have a 2-year exemption period for site of care review. This is where there's a little bit of debate and confusion from provider side, because specifically CMS here is suspending RAC audit reviews, so recovery audit contractor reviews of the short stays for these procedures that are just being proposed to come off the inpatient list for 2 years. But the QIOs that actually do the initial review for short stays, from reports from what we've gotten from providers that had their stays reviewed even in 2018 for total knee replacement, those continue. Potentially, you still have claims being denied if you're not following the proper guidance under 2 midnight rule, which can be, frankly, confusing.
Ryota, it sounds like it's going to be really a lot more compliance issues that the hospitals are going to have to worry about with these over 1,700 codes.
Exactly, Belinda. It's one where, thinking of the commercial payer equivalent, this would have been the already authorized pass-through kind of procedures. You might have to come up with, do you have the right documentation in place? And more importantly, what are the QIOs going to be looking for to meet that criteria? It is physician determination for whether they think it's appropriate for inpatient admission, but the QIOs review that. So they may be looking for documentation that the conditions you listed that were of a concern are actually managed during the stay, but we won't know for sure how this gets implemented until it actually gets rolled out. Definitely some concern from providers here.
So it sounds like not only are hospitals going to take a financial hit, but they're also going to have to put more resources into these to justify if they have them in the hospital and inpatient with less than 2 midnights. So your compliance, the amount of resources you're going to have to put to be answering those questions from the QIO, you need to start thinking about how you're going to manage them. It certainly sounds like this is a sign of a bigger change, which is CMS, not only on this administration, but the previous one, has been slowly moving procedures and different diagnoses, different services to other sites of service. We're beginning to see this was inpatient to hospital outpatient department. We've seen movement from inpatient to hospital home. We've seen SNF to SNF at home. This is a sign of CMS beginning to move much quicker to lower sites of service. And I think this is only the beginning. Certainly, this was a major change that we were not expecting. We probably should have, because they've been slowly building up to this, but this was a major change. Ryota, what is some help that SG2 can give our members in terms of getting ready for this change?
Well, this has certainly been a key area of focus for both intelligence team analytics as well as consulting. And it goes really beyond just the financial implications that we've highlighted already. It also speaks to what is the role of the hospital in your system of care going forward. So thinking through not just things that are coming off the inpatient only list, but things that are being added to the ASC procedure list And then more broadly beyond CMS, thinking what the commercial payers, employers are pushing to lower cost sites of care, as well as kind of a heightened consumer sensitivity to the cost of care and the perceived value of what they're getting, where they're getting the care delivered. For the hospital, they may be in the future that high acuity, complex, niche trauma center, depending on where you are, versus maybe the ASC becomes more an extension of previously complex procedures that you had thought only could be in a hospital setting. And it might not just be you that's owning it. Speaking to the kind of partnerships that you may need to develop, whether it's a physician ownership, sometimes it's actually with an ASC operator, so you have three parties as well. So really big strategic implications here, not just that financial and compliance issues that we've highlighted today.
We recorded that last portion with Valinda and Ryota a couple days ago. And after listening to it, I really wanted to bring in Chad Geese from our Service Line Excellence practice. He's our senior most expert in cardiovascular strategy to respond to some of what we've heard there, because this is a big change coming down the road. I love that Ryota shared his orthopedics perspective. I want to hear Chad talk specifically about CV and some other service lines and how it may impact those. So, Chad, what was your initial reaction when you saw this policy change? We heard from Ryota and Valinda, they were surprised. What did you think about it? And what does it mean to you at a high level?
Nice to weigh in here. And as Valinda and Ryota mentioned, I was surprised too. It's surprising anytime CMS makes a big change like this, whether it is new programs they're rolling out or changes to how reimbursement will work. It's onerous to keep on top of all of these things as providers are tied to the policies that CMS sets. Just a couple of years ago, AMI, acute myocardial infarction, was added to the inpatient only list for clarification's sake, meaning patients who are experiencing a heart attack or an acute myocardial infarction would need the resources of the hospital to best treat them. That was a clarification piece. And now that piece of clarification is proposed to be removed over the coming years. I think broader high-level reasoning is primarily financial here, aligning reimbursement with intensity of service and giving CMS the flexibility or the purview to adjust payment based on their findings or their audits. It's probably what's driving this. It's going to mean, Valinda and Ryota both mentioned documentation. It's going to put a little more onus on the providers here, no doubt.
Yeah, that's clear. There's going to be a big burden on hospitals to keep track of audits. And anytime regulation changes, it's a big challenge. So let's talk about the procedural side. You know, of those 1,700 codes for procedures moving off the inpatient only lists, what are some CV procedures where maybe that regulation was the only thing holding them back from moving to the outpatient setting? What kind of shifts might this now enable?
I think that's a good question, Trevor. And it's one reason why digging into some of the clinical or service line specific impacts is absolutely necessary. For cardiovascular services, I think this is almost a non-event. Let's look at some of the procedures that are still on the inpatient only list. Cardiac surgery procedures, those that are obviously cardiac surgery procedures, are open heart surgeries, CABG, coronary artery bypass grafts, valve replacement, structural heart procedures, abdominal vascular work, ascending thoracic aortic work. These are all things that are going to stay within the hospital. They're likely to stay as inpatient, regardless of whether there's an inpatient only list or not. We can look at average length of stay for things that are currently billed under a DRG, and it kind of tells the story here. Even inpatient PCI, which you would think is at risk for shifting now to the outpatient or ambulatory setting, inpatient PCI average length of stay, 3.38 days. You can take that. That's the low end of the spectrum from an average length of stay perspective, all the way up to 40 days for transplant. If I was to kind of look for some of those lower length of stay opportunities that will be challenged, yeah, it's the interventional cardiology stuff and some of the EP stuff, But all of those, or most of those, are already taken off the inpatient only list. They're already being done in the outpatient status, and quite frankly, being added to the ASC reimbursement list. Over the last 15 years within the CV space, 10 years primarily, with the advent of RAC audits that really dug into this, within the CV space, there's been a real effort to classify cases as outpatient that are outpatient and keep cases that are inpatient truly on the inpatient side. We've made progress here already, and the focus is not inpatient to outpatient status as much as it is outpatient to ambulatory shifts that are top of mind here. Just to summarize, I think this is almost a moot point for much of our CV procedures.
I won't say I'm disappointed, but thanks for that run through. I think that's the exact analysis that our planning teams are going to be doing across their service lines, understanding what might be near that tipping point that's still on the inpatient only list. If you're a planning leader running a service line, what might be some of the less obvious impacts here? Is this going to change alignment opportunities with CV physicians? There's just obviously different dynamics there than orthopedics, different kind of standard patterns across most markets in terms of independence versus employment. How's that going to impact different settings where CV procedures are already happening? Help me think about kind of the cascading impacts if there's not immediate impacts on where procedures are going to happen.
Sure. This is a really nice counterbalance to some of the concerns that Ryota had mentioned around orthopedic cases and how those may shift more rapidly with the removal of the inpatient only list. I think in the CV space, the inpatient only list is likely not to have a significant impact. It is the ASC reimbursement list that will speed up or change some of the market dynamics, physician alignment opportunities, and less so this inpatient only list decision by CMS. What we're seeing, though, within the CV space is largely employed or tightly aligned groups. Will that change given some of the additions to the ASC reimbursement list? Still yet to be seen across the country as a whole. There are certain markets where there are opportunities to shift cases and physicians are really grabbing onto putting cath labs in their own ASC or in their own offices to manage those cases. But there are a lot of levers that have to be pulled in order for that to happen, whether it's CON or employed versus independent docs really pushing for that change. And so I think the inpatient only list isn't the driver here. It's going to be some of the other policies that CMS sets.
That's a helpful overview, Chad. Thanks for giving us that reaction. And thanks for thinking through, you know, in a deep way, the impact that this could, or, you know, in some cases may not really have and may not change. So thanks for joining.
All right. Thanks for having me, Trevor.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of SG2 Perspectives, where we dug into some of the big changes coming from CMS in terms of the inpatient only list. Now, that wasn't the only big change announced as part of the prospective payment system proposal. The other big stuff is all around virtual health. So part two of this episode, where we'll get the same kind of overview from our policy team and then reaction from our strategy team, will be coming right after this, and it'll be focused on all the changes on the virtual health side. Thanks, as always, to our listeners. Please subscribe and follow if you want to hear more. And as always, I recommend you listen to other Vizient podcasts, including The Modern Practice. It's on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel and provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today. Everyone stay safe. Thanks for listening.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.